These places are beautiful, beautiful, really picturesque. But below the beautiful veneer is a real and significant need and a spiritual need. There's a barrenness. The gospel.
These places. Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast for church leaders. We're here today to talk about rural church ministry, and I'm joined by Rob Scullin. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Adrian.
Who's from Bakewell. If you've ever been to Bakewell, you might think it's full of people, because it often is full of people. But how many people live in Bakewell, Rob?
Bakewell is a small market town of 4,000 people.
4,000, yeah. Okay, 4,000 people. So small town, almost large village kind of size. Doesn't take you long to go from one side to the other, does it? Now, let's stop, let's pause. We're here to talk about rural ministry. So you're already thinking, if you're listening and you're in a rural area, you're thinking, great, at last, someone's talking about where I am. So please stick around. We want to encourage you and support you if that's you. But if you're not in a rural area, as many listeners will not be, don't switch off, right? You need to learn about the joys and the challenges of rural ministry, because if we're really serious about reaching Britain for Christ, we need to reach rural areas, don't we? So everybody should be interested in this subject, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think of Luke 14. Jesus tells the parable of the great banquet, and he sends his servant out into urban places. The master of the banquet cares about urban places. Comes back and there's still room, and he sends a servant out into the country lanes. And there's going to be a great banquet, and the Lord is inviting and bringing people into that banquet from urban places rural places.
There will be people at that banquet with mud on their shoes.
Oh, man.
Because they've come in from the rural places. So let's just do some facts and figures so we get this right. How many people live in rural areas in the UK, roughly?
We won't
hold you to this, but roughly.
I think there are different definitions of rural, but one of the ones that the Rural Project have been riffing off is a government stat that something like 10.6 million people live in rural communities across Great Britain.
10.6 million, that's a lot of people, to use that Jonah language, who don't know their right hand from their left. Because you were just saying to me before we started recording that the number of people who would be a Bible believing evangelical believers in Bakewell, less than 1%, you think?
I think so. I really want to be generous when we talk about these stats, but something like,
and that means, it seems to me, that if everyone in Bakewell who is an evangelical came to one church and didn't travel out to other churches as people do, or go away for holidays as people do, and was there every Sunday. So basically not like reality. But if everybody came to one church, there would be less than 40 people there. That's what that means, isn't it? If it was just people in Bakewell, which is quite sobering.
Just Bakewell.
Yeah, it's quite sobering. Now Bakewell is not just Bakewell, of course. So tell us a little bit about how Bakewell works. It's a market town, right? So how does that work? How does it function?
Yeah, I mean, just to talk about our church gathers in Bakewell, and a small number live in Bakewell, and the vast majority of our households travel from the
people
villages.
Who are listening and not watching will not see that your arms are spread wide at this point. You can't take the preacher out of the man. Yeah.
So the national park is 550 square miles, and there's 100 surrounding villages. And people from some of those faraway villages come and gather into our church.
And when you say village, that will be different things. I mean, some of those might have a pub and a community centre, maybe. Some of them might just be like, almost like hamlets, right? Is that right?
Yeah, I would say we've got 100 villages, which are more significant communities of a say 50 to 100.
So there might have been a parish church there or something like that.
200 people, And then you've got 1,000 farms and hamlets also in the national park as well. So our church gathers from all of those areas to Sunday gathering. And Bakewell will bring in exactly the same way, not thinking about the church here, but Bakewell, the town, will bring people in for secondary school in the same way. From those farms, there's an agricultural hub that meets every Monday in the agricultural business centre. So the farmers come in, and that's their centre of community as well on the Monday. So
you need the co-op.
There's a co-op. Yes, we've got an Aldi.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I've been to it.
So Bakewell has a real identity as being a hub of the national park.
So it's the right place to have a church in terms of sort of reaching out. Mm. There's a sense of people are used to coming into that centre. But let's just talk about this a bit more in bold terms. You know, we're talking, aren't we, about reaching the lost. We're talking... you know, it'd be very easy to talk in terms of rural ministry about nice places to live, about the countryside life, da 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 da. But we're talking about people who are lost without the gospel. And the desire of all of us, wherever we are, whether you're ministering in a church, in an inner city environment, whether you're in a suburban environment, rural, whether you live in a tower block or whether you live in a palatial manse, do those still exist? I don't know. You should want people to be saved. And that's what we want, isn't it? We want people from all places to be saved. And that means if Britain's going to be reached, rural places need to be reached.
Yeah. And I'm really encouraged when I talk to people that live and minister, belong to churches in rural places. They don't see this in opposition to the real need in urban places. Those that are, you know, areas of poverty as well. There's a real need. Jesus loves those people, and he himself proclaimed the kingdom to people in urban places, but he also cares about those rural places too. These are souls with an eternal destination, and there's a real need.
Yeah, and they are in some sense, and we've got to be careful how we use this language, they are in some sense hard places, aren't they, for the gospel?
Well, I think so.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Oh, Rob? That's a really hard question.
Let me just talk you through the answer. let's go back one step. Why do you? I mean, just observing. What's? Let's talk about rural places in general before we get to the gospel. Let's paint a picture. Let's just give some indication of what it's like to live in a rural place. What are some of the challenges for people living, just, you know, ordinary folk living in a rural place? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the features of rural life that make life challenging to a certain extent?
Yeah, I mean, to answer that question, I have to recognise that different rural places have look and feel.
So we've got to be careful. Okay, that's a helpful rebuke. We've got to be careful about flattening and just saying, well, this rural place is just like that rural place. They're all very different.
Yeah. Okay. So for example, you know, in the national park, there's limitations on the amount of building that can take place. Right. In comparison to the Lake District, very few of those houses are therefore secondary homes. We have there is a market of holiday homes in the Peak District, but not in comparison to say the Lake District or whatever. And because of that, the house prices are somewhat more elevated in our areas. There are real areas of affluence. You know, cost of living is much higher in our area. So people struggle with that. We're geographically dispersed, and perhaps the public transport networks aren't as...
So you can't rely on the bus coming through the village every hour.
I've had a conversation with a number of people that have waited for a bus that never came. And I'm not saying they were there at the wrong time, because you don't want to accuse anyone. But
these days in the Peak District, the only railway lines are ones you cycle along, I think, aren't they? They've all been turned into trails for tourists. But
although we've got a good network from Grindleford to Manchester now, and I've come by train today.
Have you?
Matlock, just outside.
So again, I mean, that might be very different depending on where you live. You might live in a rural place which is better connected.
Yeah.
And perhaps if it's not so touristy, congestion isn't such a problem. So I've tried to drive through the Peak District, through Bakewell in the summer. It's madness.
Yeah.
It's just, it's solid traffic. So it's easy just not to move. So I guess it's just helpful to hear every place is different. Yeah. If you're on the Isle of Wight, you could be in a rural context on the Isle of Wight, but you're on an island and so you're shut off from the...
Yes.
Every place is different. So it's good to hear that.
Yeah.
What about, you know, I don't know, is there an average person? Is the average person who lives in a rural place younger or older than average? What's the sort of demographic?
Yeah, I think we're slightly older demographic than perhaps around here or more urban places. Yeah. I think something like 30%. It's a while since I looked at the stats, about 30% over the age of 65.
Any particular reason for that?
It's a nice place to retire.
Okay.
Some people move for the good life. There's a lot of there's is the industry the right word? A care home kind of industry in the national park and in Batewell and places like that. We don't have universities. So we lose our younger people.
Which has that's a whole different podcast, isn't it, in terms of impact on the church.
Which is good, and we look for really good, healthy urban churches that are going to really love our young people when they go to those places too. But going back to your earlier question, you know, what's kind of harder, what makes it hard, a hard place? I think I think people are genuinely resistant to the gospel, and not in a really, you know, hostile way, but this benign indifference. There's the good life. It's beautiful. There is an element of spirituality, but not really wanting, not really wanting to hear the gospel of Jesus spoken about, or it just seems to be this benign indifference and reluctance to engage with the gospel in our context.
Less ethnically diverse, I'm guessing, on average.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's interesting, often in cities, which are much more ethnically diverse in all kinds of different ways, people are challenged about faith and about what they believe and all the time. So I suppose that's kind of has an impact that's basically more wide.
Right. You can't escape the fact that, and I can't speak for all rural places, but I think there is a trend, less ethnically diverse, but that doesn't take away the diversity that is in these rural places. Okay. Because there is the age diversity. There's a real class diversity. So we lived in a village, 500 people for 10 years before we moved to Batewell with the planting of the church. And in most of the villages like ours, there are areas that don't make the heritage maps. Areas of deprivation and poverty. So all the things that we talk about with deprived hard places in urban places, our villages have those too.
Right. Okay.
There's rural deprivation and poverty.
And employment.
The same issues.
I know one or two farmers who would say 60 years ago, my dad employed 20 people on the farm. Now we employ one. I'm guessing that's not uncommon.
Right.
In sort of agricultural areas.
Right. A real challenge and something we have a real heart for. Yeah. Are people struggling involved in agriculture and farming? Absolutely. And I think it's really sad. I don't want to keep this upbeat. But there's...
Well, we want to be realistic.
Mental health challenges within agriculture is a significant issue.
Is it?
And I believe suicide rates, it's a problem with all men of a certain age in all areas and women too, but certainly men of a certain age, but within farming community, it's quite acute, quite felt.
So it's easy to see need. And beyond all that, we need to see the greatest need, which is the gospel need.
Adrian.
Yeah.
And these places are beautiful, often beautiful, really picturesque, but below the beautiful veneer is a real and significant need, a spiritual need. There's a barrenness. The gospel.
These places have been touched by the gospel in the past. Lots of them. I mean, it's extraordinary, especially the way Methodism really took hold in many villages and rural places. But as Methodism has died out, really catastrophically in the last 20, 30 years, gospel witness in these places has catastrophically died out, hasn't it? I mean, presumably these villages around you, they may have a parish church, I guess, but I'm guessing not many of those would have a weekly service with an evangelical.
No, and they really struggle to meet the needs of in those chapels, even if they're ministering to only a few people in these villages. Yeah. So they have to rotate what they're doing. But no, I mean, during the evangelical awakening, you know, people heard the gospel. I've got a hero of mine, William Bagshaw, if anybody wants to research, he's called the Apostle of the Peak.
Yes, right.
And from Born, grew up in Tideswell. Traveled the area, proclaiming the gospel. Wonderful stories of, in the same as the time of Wesley and Whitfield. Mm-hmm. You know, people heard the gospel, they responded in repentance and faith. Buildings were constructed so that people could gather and meet, and it's wonderful. And you've got the remnant of these chapels, and some of them are still a gospel witness in those areas. But a lot of them are closed. A lot of them are sold now. A lot of them, and this will be lots of people's experience. Their houses, their shops. There's no longer the gospel witness that there once was.
So the Peak District has given us three wonderful things: the Apostle to the Peaks, Apostle of the Peaks, Mrs. Booth from one of the founder of the Salvation Army, joint founder of the Salvation Army, was born in Ashbourne. Did you know that?
Wow.
So there you go. Not just quite Peak District, but almost Peak District.
Almost.
And another
beautiful market town. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And of course, Peak Trinity, the third beautiful thing in the Peak District. How old's Peak Trinity?
You haven't said the Bakewell tartan pudding, have you?
Well, I'm a celiac. I can't eat gluten. So actually, Bakewell tartan pudding. There is one place in Bakewell that will serve me a gluten-free Bakewell pudding,
okay,
but it's not good for me.
Okay.
Yes, let the viewer understand. And there we are. The third beautiful thing in the Peak District is Peak Trinity. Tell us just briefly the story. How old is the church?
Adrian, we'll be 6 years old this Sunday.
This Sunday?
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Yeah. Happy birthday to you.
I feel like we haven't done enough for this Sunday to mark it now, and my head's kind of going there. God has been so good.
How many people? Numbers are not everything, we know that. But you started from scratch with zero, or with you, and a few others. So how many people would gather on a Sunday now at Lady Manor School?
It varies. So if it was a Sunday during...
If everyone was there.
Well, I'm going to say, if it was a Sunday in the summer holiday, because we get a lot of tourists, we're about to burst out of the building. I mean, some Sundays were just taken by surprise in the summer holidays. But no, usually we'll be... more than 55,
praise the
60
Lord.
Adults.
Praise the Lord.
And children.
And how many of those from Bakewell, how many from outside, roughly?
Yeah, great question. So of our regular church congregation, 9 households in Bakewell.
Okay.
And something like 30 plus households altogether. So the rest are traveling from the
including some
village.
From Tideswell?
Yes.
Yes. Isn't that great that heritage, I knew that. Isn't that great that heritage has continued?
It's really great. The church in the week are littered across the Peak District. We've got our householders as far away as Bradwell, Peak Forest, say in the High Peak, Tideswell.
So how long would that take them to drive to church?
In the summer, how long should it take them to drive?
Yes, okay, okay.
No, I'm joking. 30 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
But then it's really important that we see that church is more than just that Sunday gathering.
Yeah. Yeah.
In all contexts, urban and rural. So we look at our home groups to be more geographically located.
Right. Okay. So they'd be more reflective of where people are located at the moment.
Yeah. So the leadership of that group that catches Bradwell and Peak Forest is based in Tideswell.
And you're beginning to touch on some of the challenges, really, of operating in a rural area. I guess one of the key challenges is dispersal. People are dispersed. They're not all within walking distance of the church. Can't be, really. They're dependent on a car. And these places are dispersed. You were saying to me before we started recording that the kind of the model of the secondary school is not a bad one to think about. You know, where do people go to secondary school? So presumably some of these little villages still just about sustain a village primary school today, I guess, in a few places.
Yeah.
But no secondary schools outside of Bakewell. I mean, in the surrounding area, you're going into Bakewell, aren't you, for secondary school?
Yeah, so you've got a secondary school in Matlock, which is one of the market towns to the east of us. Secondary school in Bakewell. There's a secondary school to the north, so just south of Sheffield in Hope.
Buxton?
Buxton will have a few secondary schools. So Buxton's a bigger town I don't want to quote what the population is. But
seeing how people travel to school, that's not a bad model for understanding how places work, right? That's a good model.
Yeah, right. So the though they might have a village primary school, They're served in in the Baitwell catchment area by Lady Manor School, which is where we actually gather as a church on a Sunday. Mm. And in the same way that on our church on a given Sunday, there would be a few of us that will walk to the school where the church is. The vast majority drive in. Park and gather and then go back, and that's the same as the school during any school day as well. We see them walking past our house up to the school, but most are bussed in from the area and then dispersed. So we must see church in rural places as more than the Sunday gathering.
More than that event.
We must see churches as a family that are connecting through the week as well as on a Sunday.
So how you're organised and structured actually is more than just a question of pragmatism. So in a larger church in an urban context, that might be more a question of pragmatism. You can mix up your small groups. So I'm just thinking about an article one of our staff wrote about small groups. Really, really helpful article for us. Just, you know, how to mix up your small groups and just refresh them. You're thinking an entirely different way because you're not thinking about the small groups serving all the small groups serving everybody. You're thinking about, no, there's a small group for that geographical location. So you can't just mix up your small groups. They're serving a slightly different purpose, aren't they? Is that a good example of just what you're talking about there?
Yeah, although we're obviously seeking to balance, you know, we have to go with pragmatism again.
Of course,
you know, ideally, they're serving a geographical area, people in the same village being together. Yes. But sometimes we have to balance.
Yeah, you could get all the weird people in one group. Is that what you're saying? Pastor Rob said.
of course,
you have to do that. You want someone who can teach in each group.
That's a real challenge, right?
Yeah, of course you do.
But we're looking at equipping God's people on a Sunday to go out into the villages and in their workplace, those that are working, to be a light in a place of spiritual darkness. We want to be equipping people to be good neighbours in their village.
Is it harder to invite someone to church somewhere where you don't live? No, so you live in Tideswell. Is it harder to say to the person who's your next door neighbour, "I'll come along to church with me on Sunday. We meet in Bakewell." Yeah. Is that a harder thing than if you're just all in the same area?
Do you know it's a really hard question, whatever context you're in, isn't it?
Go on.
Would you like to come to? Yeah. But we need, I just want to say, I'm just going off piece here. I just think that's something we need to be doing regularly, whatever context, isn't it? And overcoming the barriers to just extending that invitation. Maybe it's geography, maybe it's transport, maybe we need to be thinking, how can we help, if those people were interested, how can we help them get to church? There may be people that just aren't mobile, not able to drive at the stage of life or whatever. How can we help? How would we help those people get to church? So I think I'm not qualified to say whether the response we get is any different to an urban place, but it's usually along the lines of, "Oh, that's very nice," but then there'll be an excuse why not to.
Yeah,
but people do respond. But I tell you what we're seeing as a positive response in it to an invitation in a rural context is it comes from something that we heard from Jen Wilkins. If you've ever heard of any of Jen Wilkins' podcasts or anything like that,
I've heard the one you're about to quote, I don't know, but I have heard some of her stuff.
Big favorite in our household, and one of the things we were challenged about being more missional in our context was creating a culture in our family where the children, as well as us, can just speak to our friends. This is our children too, and say, "Would you like to come back to my house for tea?"
Okay.
So actually, the main event that we want to invite people to is not necessarily the Sunday gathering, but actually our lives,
right?
Yeah. And our tables and our
that's
homes.
The thing that's compelling.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes our children do extend that invitation, and we're taken by surprise. We have to remind ourselves that it was us that encouraged that in the
thing. Yeah, it's a good thing. Tell us a little bit about the rural project. You mentioned that right at the top of the show.
Yeah.
So this is an initiative really to help people who are serving in rural areas, to equip them, to encourage them, just to help them keep going. You're doing that with a few others, including Jonathan Bond, who's our director for smaller churches. So tell us a little bit about the vision behind the rural project briefly.
Yeah, so the Rural Project is a charity in its own right. Jonathan Bond Scotland is one of the three trustees actually, which is really great. Quite simply, the strapline is to be a purposeful and prayerful partnership, because we know we're dependent on God. To see the gospel advance in rural villages, hamlets, and market towns across Great Britain. Just to emphasise that. And that purposeful partnership, the aim of it is to not just bring rural people together, but urban churches, rural churches, rural members, urban members, donors together to see the gospel advance to catalyze more evangelism in rural places, together to catalyze revitalization of these chapels that are being left like ships with a retreating tide. That together we catalyze church planting, new works in areas where there are no gospel witnesses and a real spiritual.
We want to reach those 10.6 million people.
Amen.
The Lord does not desire the destruction of the wicked.
Yeah.
Any of the wicked, and neither should we.
Yeah. But what the rural project isn't, I know it's about what it is.
Yes.
That was the question. But what it isn't is something to displace in our churches the great networks that we belong to. So our church, as an example, belongs to the FIC. We belong to Midlands Gospel Partnership. And these serve us so well.
They all do different, slightly different things.
So what we want to do is and what is happening, and it's been happening for the last 2 years, is have this partnership, which is much more narrow in scope. And so what we're doing to catalyze evangelism, planting, and revitalization is bring together those people in partnership, mainly rural folk. And we've got people connecting from the Orkney Islands down to the Isle of Wight and everything in between, coming together online to share stories about how they're applying the Great Commission in their context, talking about the fruit, talking about their challenges, praying together. Because we believe quite simply by coming together, sharing stories and praying together, that in itself will be a catalyst for mission. And there are other things we're doing, but it's all about that narrow scope of equipping, championing, catalyzing rural mission.
Have a look on the website. You've got a website, and we'll put the link in the show notes to have a look at that. Just as we come towards a close, let's just say something to people who are listening who are not in a rural setting, right? Because it struck me that most people are closer to rural settings than they know. I was on a plane the other day, and it makes it sound like I've got some sort of private jet. I don't go on a plane very often, but I was on a plane taking off from Birmingham Airport, and Birmingham obviously is very developed, very, very large city. It's in a very, very, what you would think is a very, very industrial part of the country. You sort of think about the M6 corridor and all the towns and cities along that corridor. But as we rose up and I was gazing out the window, it struck me how quickly the landscape becomes rural. It's very obvious. And I think at night you can especially see that. You see sort of these collections of lights, don't you, all gathered together. And then you see huge areas where there's very little. And it's just good to remind ourselves that probably all of us are within close reach of rural areas. And probably, you know, we don't want to be too sweeping, but probably that means all of us are within reach of rural areas which are unreached for the gospel. I mean, there are some great things going on in rural areas. In Bakewell, for example, but lots of these places will be unreached, won't they? So I think we do all need a heart. What would you say if you're talking to me, right? You're talking to Adrian. Pastor Adrian is a pastor. You know, talk to me 10 years ago. I was in East London, right? I'm thinking about the huge numbers of people, the huge density. Tell me something, Rob, about rural areas that I need to grasp hold of.
Yeah, I would love those opportunities more and more. but first thing I'd say is, look, it's not about either or. The Lord cares about your context and your investment. It's not about guilting you consider this and not consider this.
Yeah.
The Lord really cares about your ministry and that. But I'd say a couple of things. First thing is, there is this thought that as we invest in our urban places, the gospel will just overflow, flow down out into the rural places. And I would just encourage the thought that, but that's not our experience. So if in your healthy urban church that's your desire, it does require, yeah, you hit the nail on the head, just that intentionality to think, okay, how many people gathered with us on a Sunday that actually live in rural places? How can we use our resources to reach the rural places that are actually represented by our church? Or how can we bless those areas in terms of our decision making? And sometimes it just requires prayer and an intentional endeavor to try something. But secondly, you might not have people in those rural places, and you might not. Well, one of the amazing things about our story is we had an urban church. I don't think they would describe themselves an urban church, but a Texan church, but in a perhaps more rural setting than your average Texan church. That was quite small, actually. But they couldn't plant themselves and invest in church planting themselves. But what they decided to do was, rather than disperse their missional giving amongst five or six recipients, they decided to focus their giving 10% of their income to Peak Trinity in those early days, and to really invest in a meaningful way church planting in a rural place. And we're the fruit of that generosity. So I would say, if you're compelled that the Lord cares about rural places, these 10.6 million people are our responsibility, as well as the urban people being our responsibility, then one of the ways is to consider how we can use our resources to meet both the urban need and the rural need.
Ed, that's a great Macedonian call. Thank you very much, Rob. Thanks for joining us. Listen, it's exciting to hear about what's going on in all kinds of different places. And it's exciting to hear that in places like Bakewell, people are, that there is an opportunity for them to go to a Christian church, to hear a gospel message, to meet evangelical believers. What a thrill that is. So bless your new work, brother. And especially in the work of the Rural Project. I hope it thrives. Really hope it thrives, because we want people to be reached, don't we, with the good news.
Oh, man. Thanks,
Adrian. Thanks so much. And thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please do rate and review. And let us know your feedback and your comments. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and join us again soon.